This is Father Bob Warren of the Franciscan Friars of the Atonement. Thank you for listening to this rebroadcast of the Ave Maria Hour radio show. The Friars' popular Ave Maria Hour was first brought to the radio airwaves in 1939, recorded in New York City and on the mountainside grounds at Graymore, a home in Garrison, New York. These timeless classic stories of the Bible and the lives of the saints came to life each week through dramatic reenactment by professional actors and actresses. You know, friends, Christ once said, "Do not hide your treasure under a bushel." In saying this, he meant share your gifts, share your talents. The Friars of the Atonement feel the message in these broadcasts remains as powerful and timely as when they were originally aired, and we are so happy to be able to share them with you today. To learn more about the missions and ministries of the Friars of the Atonement, I invite you to visit our website, www.atonementfriars.org. In the meantime, sit back and enjoy this rebroadcast of the Ave Maria Hour.
The story of a courageous American, Charles Carroll of Carrollton, Maryland.
It was Charles Carroll whom the Congress of 1826 named as one who stood eminently forward in the purest and noblest band of patriots the world has ever seen. Tell was nearly over that afternoon in 1826. Charles Carroll was a silver-haired old man, approaching 90, as he sat propped up in an armchair on the long veranda of his stately Maryland mansion. Beside him, her pen poised to catch his words, sat his granddaughter and secretary, Emily McTavish.
It is a difficult message to compose, Emily. The words come hard. That scroll, Emily, may I see it again?
Why, certainly, Grandfather. Here, let me unroll it. There. Oh, it is handsome, isn't it? An embossed copy of the Declaration of Independence. Oh, I think it's a splendid gift.
And I agree.
You know, I think it makes me even prouder than it does you. From the Congress of the United States of America. In tribute to the last surviving signer of the Declaration of Independence, Charles Carroll of Carrollton, on the 50th anniversary of the signing. Aren't you just bursting with pride?
There's no special cause for pride, my child. One must feel gratitude and humility, not pride.
But there is room for all, Grandfather. And you've so much to be proud of. But of what especially? Tell me what.
Well, now, if it'll make you happy, my dear, let me see. Oh, I could recall many things, Emily, very many. Why, almost from the moment I returned to these shores.
Returned? But where had you been that time?
In France and England, for nigh 17 years. All my education, Emily. We didn't know it for certain then, but the War of Independence was close upon us. The colonies were splitting in two as men took sides. I had chosen my side early, but there were some who thought me mad. There was one neighbor, for instance, an important man in Maryland, who came to visit me one day around 1770.
But you're too brilliant a man, Carroll. You must realize what you could do in politics.
I am aware, good friend Elson.
But you don't act it, Carroll. A man of your wealth, your education, your ability... Seems a pity to saddle yourself with a needless handicap.
Handicap, Mr. Elson? I've never looked upon my religion as a handicap.
There was no offense meant, Mr. Carroll. But you know as well as I that a Catholic may no more hope for office in this colony than he may vote. And most assuredly, he may not vote.
Most assuredly, sir. But there may be things that he holds higher than the vote or the honors of office. You forget my neighbor.
that it was to maintain our faith that my grandfather left his native England. My father sent me to Europe for many years because Catholic schools were lacking here. Such faith, Mr. Elson, is not to be shed for political opportunity.
Again, forgive me, sir. I would not argue with you, though I will admit I came to sound you out. These are troubled times, Mr. Carroll. The spirit of rebellion grows in Maryland.
In all the colonies. And it must continue to grow until it reaches its climax.
Meaning what, sir?
Separation from the mother country. Freedom is to be won now, or perhaps not at all.
Well, I see my mission was even more futile than I expected.
You knew my sentiments.
I had been warned, but I could not believe it. I had hopes you might yet be salvaged for the side of law and order, the side of the English court.
And you might add, the side of wealth and privilege.
And surely you, if anyone, belong on such a side. You, whom many call the wealthiest man in the colonies. Surely you do not class yourself with this rabble that shouts for independence, fearing no loss because it has nothing to lose.
We have all lost the freedom to be governed, to be taxed by men of our own choosing, to be treated as English citizens, not as slaves of some conquered land.
You take the new Stamp Act too seriously, Mr. Carroll.
I take it for what it is, sir. The latest of many steps which indicate that England is using these colonies for her own profit, with no concern for the rights of free men. See how she seeks to throttle industry in the colonies.
Well, I see now why you have become the hero of that rabble, of the farmers, the merchants, the laborers. Ill-fitted company for you, sir.
Proud company. Perhaps the bulwark of a new nation that will come into being, Mr. Elson. In there. Come in.
Yes, Patrick.
It's some sort of committee, sir. Call themselves freemen. They beg leave to speak with you.
I was going, Mr. Carroll. I bid you good day.
Nay, please stay, Mr. Elson. This committee comes without appointment.
As you wish.
Show them in, Patrick.
Will you come in, gentlemen? This way.
Mr. Carroll, I hope we do not intrude. My name is Mr. Johnson, sir. I speak for this committee of citizens.
Be seated, please, all of you.
Thank you.
This is Mr. Elson, a neighbor.
How do you do, Mr. Elson?
Good morning.
How do you do?
Mr. Carroll, we have a favor to ask of you.
Please ask it.
You know, of course, that the Maryland Provincial Convention will soon be formed to present the grievances of our colony.
A revolutionary and a foolhardy venture.
If you please, Elson. I know of the convention, Mr. Johnson. What would you have of me?
We must name 7 delegates from Annapolis. We want to name you as one, if you will consent.
Well, Mr. Johnson, you know of my religion. I would not be eligible for office.
You may worship as your conscience guides, sir. We care only that you are a man who loves freedom and will fight for it. Will you accept, sir, as a favor to us?
Please, sir, it is the wish of...
Gentlemen, gentlemen,
we do have...
As a favor to you, no. As a privilege to me, with all my heart. I'm convinced, gentlemen. Close that window, please.
There's the proof, Mr. Carroll. That crowd down the street. We as a committee represent not only them, but the citizens of Maryland who are determined that Stuart does not land the tea from his brig.
And Stuart's ship, where is it now?
Out there in the Annapolis Harbor. But he has already paid that British tax.
Only now he dares not attempt to land his cargo.
Anthony Stuart is a determined man, and a courageous one.
Yes, but he will not speak to the citizens gathered around his home.
It is an imposing array for discussion. I have watched it through the day, and it seems to grow with the hours. From the coonskin caps and the muskets... Many are frontiersmen, are they not?
They've ridden for miles, ever since they heard the news.
And from farms and plantations they've come, from as far as Baltimore.
Understand, sir. Just the word of mouth and they've flocked in. They merely heard that Stuart had broken faith and paid the vicious duty we'd sworn to ignore.
As we'll ignore all taxes levied by a tyrant ruler.
What's happening out there?
Well, what is it? Down with the pig! Down with the pig!
The gibbet. The gibbet has arrived outside Stuart's house.
There comes the victim now.
A hanging, Lewis. That's not your plan.
A hanging, but only an effigy. It's John Muir, the tax collector of the port.
You realize, Lewis, and the rest of you, this crowd might go beyond hanging, just an effigy,
but
you know.
We cannot predict, sir. That's why we've come to you.
Well, what would you have me do?
Speak to Stuart, that's what.
Make him see the light. Make him destroy that cursed tea.
Aye, that's it, sir. He must respect your fairness of mind. We'll all accept your decision, whatever it be.
Just say yes, sir, and we shall have Stewart here within the quarter hour.
Will you undertake it, sir? As a service to the colony.
Guy, look out there now. They've sprung up wood and effigy.
Time may grow short, Mr. Carroll. Will you speak to Stewart if we get him to come here?
No, gentlemen. I will go to him.
Make room there. Room for Mr. Carroll. One side now.
Mr. Carroll is going to Stewart.
Make room now. One side, please. Make room and clear a passage.
It's bad walking, sir.
The crowd seems thicker with the passing minutes.
Yeah, well, we're nearly there. There, you can see Stewart now in the window.
See up there on the second floor. I think he sees you.
Yeah, he's disappeared now.
Make room there now. Make space. It's Mr. Carroll. Let him through. Room for Mr. Carroll now. He's come to speak to Stewart.
Let him to the door now, please. Please, let him to the door.
Well, at last the door, sir. Now we must hope he lets us in.
Stewart, Mr. Carroll, he's come.
He's welcome. But come into this room, please.
As you will.
This way, please. Sit down, Mr. Carroll. Now understand me, sir. I shall not be moved by the threats of a mob.
Your courage is admirable, sir. But do you appreciate why this mob, as you say, has come? It is a group of free men, come to defend its rights as free men.
And I am a free man, too, am I not? With the rights to pay or not to pay the British duty as I see fit?
Is not the issue beyond you as an individual, Mr. Stewart?
Oh, I'm only a ship's owner, sir. I transport what I'm paid to transport. On the Peggy Stewart, it happens to be tea. On tea, there happens to be a duty.
And there happens also to be an agreement, solemnly adopted by the colonies, not to import merchandise bearing this unfair tax.
Well, it does not bind us.
The question, Mr. Stewart, is not of your right to bring in tea or pay a duty, but of your right to help perpetuate a vicious system.
Well, I had not seen it so. The tax is excessive, I agree.
The cost matters not. The fact is that the tax exists by the word of a tyrant, not by law, that matters greatly.
But surely if one man yields to the tax...
One man here in Annapolis, others in Baltimore, in Boston, in New York. Single men make many, and many make the tax successful, and make the crown feel confident it can continue to govern us only as it sees it to fit its own ends.
Perhaps I did act in haste. What can I do? Destroy the cargo?
You can do more.
More?
Your ship out there has become a symbol of a great wrong. It has brought hundreds here for miles around.
I understand their anger.
You can change it to pride. You can join them in the struggle for their rights as free men.
But how?
By burning your ship.
Burning it? You jest, sir.
You must burn it, Stewart.
But the loss...
The loss will be great, yet it will be small against the gain of a smashing answer to the English crown.
But surely the ship cannot mean so much.
It meant enough to draw this crowd which surrounds your house. And it means much to the king's agents who watch to test the temper of our people. The issue is not you or the Peggy Stewart, but justice and liberty for us all.
I did not realize.
It will not be weakness for you to yield now, Mr. Stewart, but strength.
It is hard, you understand. It's extremely hard.
I do understand. But you will decide soon.
Yes, very soon. Please wait.
He's been in there a long time.
The crowd is losing patience. Perhaps it's time for us to...
No, look there, the door.
The door?
It's Stewart.
Stewart?
And Mr. Carroll.
Well, what's Stewart carrying there? Why, it's...
Yes, so it is.
It's a flaming torch.
A torch?
Yes.
For what? Where's he going?
Look, he's heading for the dock, isn't he? Why, sure, that's Stewart. See, he's searching the rowboat, still with the torch.
Why, of course, don't you see? He's being run out to the Peggy Stewart.
Yeah, that's
He's going to burn the ship.
Burn it up.
Burn it, do you hear?
General Washington is expecting you, Mr. Carroll. Go right in, please.
Thank you.
Charles Carroll, it's good to see you again. Come in, please, my good friend. I've been waiting anxiously for you.
I've been less anxious to get here, General. Well, the news I bear is...
Yes?
We are assured the Canadians will stay neutral.
They're splendid. We have handicaps enough to face now without new foes to our north.
Then things still go poorly with our revolution?
They do. And there are also some discouraging developments in your home colony, Charles. The spirit of independence wanes there. New instructions have been voted. Maryland delegates will disavow in the most solemn manner all designs in the colonies for independence.
It's a complete turnover.
In your absence, caution has rewon the battle. Many influential men hope for a peaceful solution. They've persuaded the colony.
Is Maryland alone in this opposition?
Quite alone.
But I can't believe Maryland will stand apart.
It may well be. Some have fought well to hold the line, but in vain.
No, General. It will not be in vain. I'm returning home at once. Maryland will sign with the colonies.
It's a great day for Continental Hall and for me, too. Imagine me, a free man, standing here to watch all the bigwigs of these 13 colonies giving old King George the boot.
Such disrespect, John, for your monarch.
He's not my monarch, friend. Not after they finish signing that parchment up there. Ah, think of it. Declaration of Independence. Independence. Sounds good, doesn't it?
Good and dangerous, if you ask me. How do you reckon they feel signing that thing up there? Jefferson and Adams and Franklin and the rest. Signing their lives away, I say.
It doesn't scare them any. Didn't you hear John Hancock when he wrote his name? Wrote it big as a road sign, he did. There, he said, John Bull can read my name without spectacles. And he may double his reward on my head. That's nerve for you.
What about that gentleman over there, the one who signed next?
Huh? Him? Mm-hmm. From Maryland, isn't he? Why, sure, sure. That's Charles Carroll. They say he's the only Catholic among the signers.
And the richest man in these colonies, too. With $2 million.
And he's used a good lump of it for our cause, has he not?
You know, John, you'd think a chap like that, he'd be content with the world and not go looking for change.
He certainly looked for it. I hear he worked day and night to get Maryland to join up here.
Did he? Oh, there, he's getting ready to sign now. Look, John Hancock's asking him something.
Mr. Carroll, have you any objection to signing?
Not the least, sir. Where shall I sign?
Right here, please.
There. Charles Carroll of Carrollton. Now there'll be no mistaking which Charles Carroll signed.
Yes, Emily, that's the way it was. And they were no empty phrases at the close of that memorable document. Remember how they went?
Yes, I think so. With a firm reliance on the protection of divine providence, we
mutually pledged to each other our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor.
But you still have them all. The Lord did protect you, Grandfather.
And indeed, we needed divine help. If it was a struggle to make the final break with England, it was an equal struggle to make it succeed. For often it was only General Washington's courage and unflagging patriotism that pulled us through. Yes, Emily, it was truly a gigantic uphill struggle to create this nation.
But was there no help from the outside?
Oh, in time there was much help, and we needed it. In fact, early in the war...
For the Continental Congress, Mr. Carroll. At this stage, it seems imperative to us that we seek a military alliance with France.
I agree, sir. France could be a powerful ally.
Accordingly, we are dispatching Benjamin Franklin to Paris to achieve that end.
An excellent choice. Mr. Franklin is an extremely able negotiator. He will succeed if anyone can.
We share your confidence in him, but it's a tremendously urgent task. We feel that we will need all help possible.
To be sure.
We will need your help, Mr. Carroll.
My help? I'm honored, sir, but...
As I recall, you spent many years in France as a young man.
Well, yes, I was at school and university there. I do know the language.
And the French political leaders? You would be an invaluable ally to Franklin and a worthy spokesman for our cause of liberty.
Thank you, sir. But has Mr. Franklin been consulted on this?
He has. Will you undertake it, Mr. Carroll?
I am at Mr. Franklin's service.
some time, Emily, but at length negotiations succeeded. The French sent over a large force of trained troops to reinforce Washington's hard-pressed men. They sent money and supplies, too, and their fleet helped us on seas.
And wasn't it French and American troops together who beat Cornwallis at Yorktown?
Indeed it was. A tremendous victory, Emily.
Bringing peace and calm to a free and independent country.
Free and independent, yes. But peace and calm, well, not quite yet, my dear. For we were a nation in name mostly. Our unity, our structure still had to be built.
And the Constitution was the beginning?
As important to our nation as a foundation is to a house. Yet there were many who feared to make the foundation stable. Many who mistrusted a strong central government. Preferred that power remain in individual states. That battle, too, had to be fought.
In Maryland, too?
For 7.5 months, Emily. It was as hard a fight as the one in 1776, over breaking with England. Many patriots honestly opposed it. I campaigned the state over for Maryland to ratify the Constitution. And in 1789 in New York, I sat in the first Congress of the United States.
We agree, gentlemen, that the Constitution is a splendid document. But there are many in this new nation who feel that it still lacks certain essential safeguards indispensable to free men, notably freedom of conscience. How many of our ancestors fled to these shores for just that?
But the Constitution already states, does it not, sir? No religious test shall ever be required as a qualification to any office or public trust under the United States.
It does. But ask those who have felt the sting of intolerance. Ask them if the right to worship one's God as one sees fit does not extend beyond the matter of holding office.
It should be a right for every man for every day.
Yes, the matter should not be left to the whims of individual minds in the future. Ours is to be a government of laws, not men. I submit, gentlemen, our Constitution must be amended. It cries for a specific Bill of Rights.
Aye, put it down.
And foremost in that bill, let us place a guarantee of absolute freedom of religion.
Whereas the requisite number of states have submitted their approval thereof, the following amendments to the Constitution of the United States are hereby declared in effect. Article 1. Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof.
Yes, Emily. There, too, was a proud moment. The adoption of the Bill of Rights. Then there was more work to help organize Washington's new government. And finally, even after I had retired from official position, there were years of countless visits here. Visits from Washington and Jefferson and Adams, Hancock, Monroe, Franklin. Foreign diplomats, too. Many a grave issue was debated in these halls, Emily.
But above all, in your 90 years of life, you saw our young country grow and flourish. Oh, Grandfather, you've had such a full life.
A useful one, I hope. And above all, a faithful one. Faithful to my God and my country.